Don't you love that? Recording in progress. Here we go. Okay, great. So yeah, I want to begin by just saying thanks to everyone that shared. I hope that all of us are able to get out a little bit and be with people now. I know last night, Lee and I got with Phil and Iris for the first time in forever. And it was so good to be able to be with them. So encouraging, super encouraging. Then we were able to go over to the McCulloughs and be with Ryan and Lauren for a little bit. And wow, it's so encouraging to see them in their new place and just a wonderful time with them. Great, great time. And then I got out today and I met Marty Dunn, and he and I met Tony at the mall, Paramus Mall. And we studied the Bible a little bit together, which was fantastic being out studying the Bible together with Tony. And Tony came in with so many scriptures that he wanted to go over and talk about. It was just a wonderful study. And I appreciate you doing that, Tony. And while we were there, we met Kelly and Roz. They were in the mall having lunch together. And so we just bumped into them. And that was so encouraging. You know, you haven't seen these people in a year and a half, and all of a sudden now you're just bumping into each other. It was just super, super encouraging. And I really want to thank Ryan for sharing and just great things that he's doing up in West Point there. That's fantastic. And Tina, I had the same thought. I said, man, to be trained by you, what a blessing for that person to have you in their life. That's just fantastic. Yeah. And then, of course, Cindy is back. So look out, Hudson Valley. It's so good to have Cindy back. And sister, we love you so much. You're just amazing. So I just love this region. It's just so, it's such a blessing to be with all of you. And your lives just speak so loudly. You know, I'm reading the Gospel of Mark and I'm learning so much from reading about these characters in Mark. And then I hear from you and I'm like, man, I'm learning from you as well. And just the way that you're imitating Jesus in your lives. And so it's truly a blessing to be with all of you. And I'm really, really grateful for that. Now, I should jump into the lesson because, wow, we have a lot to cover tonight in chapters 4 and 5. And my theme, as you can see in the slideshow, is faith or fear. So we're going to be looking together at faith or fear tonight. And I'm going to be talking about 4 stories from the Gospel of Mark. They're all back to back to back, just in that one section at the end of chapter 4, into chapter 5, where faith and fear are both mentioned. And there's a choice that we need to make, faith or fear. Now, I want to say here at the very beginning, and this is important that you hear this, faith or fear doesn't mean that if we have faith, we will never be fearful. Because fear is an emotion, and fear is going to come. Fear is going to happen, okay? It's just like anger. Anger is an emotion. You can say, I will never get angry again. And then you'll probably be mad at yourself the next day for being angry because anger just happens. Fear just happens. You can't control it like that. But the thing is, faith doesn't just happen. Faith isn't an emotion. Faith is a decision. And so you decide to have faith, and guess what? It helps drive away the fear. It helps control that emotion. And so these are two really important concepts that Jesus helps us to understand here in the gospel. So we're going to start with this first story, Jesus calming a storm, Mark chapter 4. And we're going to look at verses 35 through 40, and we'll see where faith and fear come in this story. Jesus, in all of these stories, is in some way doing a miraculous work. And in here, he does one of his greatest miracles. He actually overcomes nature, not just nature, but the chaotic forces of nature. We'll talk about that. So let's read in verse 35. On that day, when evening came, Jesus spoke to them, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him in a boat, although other boats were with him. A storm came with great winds, and waves were thrown into the boat. The boat began to fill with water. Jesus was in the stern of the boat, and with his head on a pillow, he was sleeping. The apprentices woke him up and asked him, "Teacher, do you not care if we perish?" Jesus got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Be silent." And it became silent. The wind ceased and a great calm came over the lake. The apprentices were terrified, and he said to them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still lack faith?" With great fear, they said to one another, "Who is this person that even the wind and the sea obey him?" So one of the things I want to stress, if you look in the Gospel of Mark, it's strange. The disciples don't fare too well in boats in the book of Mark. When they get into boats, bad things tend to happen to them, which is really strange and a bit ironic because four of them are fishermen, and you would think they would be able to handle boats pretty well, but they just get in trouble in boats. And here's a situation in which they're in a boat and they get in trouble. Storms arrive suddenly on the Sea of Galilee. It's because of the mountains that surround the Sea of Galilee and the wind pressure and the wind coming in and the heat rising, and storms come very suddenly. And when they come, some of them are very much out of control. But isn't that the way it also is in life, that storms just come suddenly and they come out of nowhere? That happens on the Sea of Galilee. It happens in our lives as well. But here's the thing. You look at the disciples, they see the storm. The storm is happening. They have absolutely no control over the storm. They feel helpless. That's another theme that you see throughout the Gospel of Mark with many of the miracle stories, is people were in a desperate, helpless situation. But with Jesus around, Jesus can control storms. With Jesus around, you're never totally helpless. And in this case, Jesus does help them. But he's in the back of the boat asleep because he's not really concerned about a storm. And so he could sleep through a storm if they would just let him sleep through a storm. But they wake him up. And when they wake him up, it's translated often when as, "Do you not care as we if we perish?" But before we throw too much shade on the disciples for saying that and questioning Jesus in that way, the way that is actually stated in the Greek implies a positive answer. So it's probably better to translate this as, "You do care that we perish, right?" They're implying, "Jesus, we know you care. Can you please wake up and do something here?" And so that's the implication in the question that they're asking. Jesus does care. The thing is, Jesus himself isn't worried about the storm because he knows he has authority over the storms, both the storm on the sea and the storms in our life as well. And I love what happens here. Jesus gets up and says a single word. It is siopa. Siopa is one word. It means be quiet, be silent. And with one word, he calms the storm. That's how powerful Jesus is. With one word, the storm settles. So much so that the lake looked calm after he said that word. I should mention that in the Near East, chaotic powers of the water are one of the things that only the most powerful gods could control. Most common gods had no control over the chaotic waters of the sea. And in their mind, underneath the sea itself, it was so chaotic that only a powerful god could control that type of force. Jesus calms the chaotic force of nature with a single word, showing how powerful he is. Even in the Bible, the only one that could calm a storm throughout the Hebrew Bible was Yahweh himself. Jesus calms a storm, showing us that he has the authority of Yahweh, the God of the Hebrew Bible. So after this amazing miracle, you would think that the disciples would be, I would be up on my feet applauding Jesus. Way to go. Thank you, Jesus. That was amazing. Instead, what happens? Instead, it says the disciples were frozen with fear. Fear enters the story. This is the first story, and fear now enters the story. Jesus consistently attempts throughout his ministry to dispel fear. That's what he wants to do. Mary Talbert, let me see if I have a slide for this. I'm sorry. Yeah, Mary Talbert writes this. She's a scholar, especially of the Gospel of Mark. Jesus is presented in these two questions, the two basic alternatives for human response to the word fear or faith. Fear comes from a lack of faith. And then I love this line, but faith can drive out fear. Are you going to choose fear or are you going to choose faith? Fear is going to happen, but you choose faith and it will help to drive out fear. I want you to see that the opposite of faith is not necessarily not believing and not necessarily disbelief. The opposite of faith is often fear. And when you feel fear entering your life, you have to ask the question, where is my faith right now? I need to cling to my faith right now. I need to find my faith right now. Because the only way for me to conquer this fear is by finding faith and choosing faith. Faith propels. Faith generates action. Fear freezes. Fear paralyzes. So another writer said, and I can't remember the source for this, but he said, to believe means to rely upon God and his might in such a way that one positively expects to encounter this might again and again. I love that definition of belief. Belief is depending on God so much that you expect him to work in your life again and again and again. You just expect him to be there. And so if you feel fearful, then you expect God to help out there. And then in verse 41, guess what? Fear enters the story for a second time. It's with great fear that the disciples ask one another, who is this person that even the wind and the sea obey him? Mm-hmm. Who is this man? Will we answer with fear or will we answer with faith? And we need to answer every moment of every day with small, faithful decisions that boldly exclaim, Jesus is my Lord. We answer with faith every time we choose faith over fear, boldness over timidity, compassion over harshness, love over hate, understanding over confusion, and light over darkness. We answer faithfully when we lend a hand to the down and out, give water to the thirsty, say no to racism, feed the hungry, encourage the weak, hug a child, lift the fallen, accept the disinherited. Let's choose faith so it will drive out our fear. Okay, now let's go on to the second story. The second story is the story of the Gerasene demoniac from Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. Go to that slide. There it is. And Mark chapter 5, and I don't have time to read the whole thing, but let me read a little bit and make a few comments. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. Now they're going from the Jewish side of the lake over to the Gentile or Roman side of the Sea of Galilee. When Jesus climbed out of the boat, immediately a man with an evil spirit came out of the tombs to meet him. Jesus had exorcised a demon from a man on the Jewish side. Now he's going to exorcise a demon from a man on the Gentile side, which shows that the demonic forces of evil or the chaotic forces of evil, they're on both sides. They're on the Jewish side of the lake and on the Gentile side of the lake, and they're all around us as well, which is why we need Jesus, why we need God. The man lived in the tombs and no one was able to bind him, not even with a chain. Now he goes into this description of desperation. This man was really desperate, so desperate that he lived in a cemetery. People don't live in cemeteries. When I was a kid in, around 14, 15, at night, we would sometimes go to cemeteries just to scare each other. We would go there. We would all play hide and seek behind tombstones. You see, there wasn't a lot to do in my hometown at night. It was a small town. And so we had to make up things to do. But none of us would ever thought of staying the whole night in that cemetery, that much less live. This was his home, which shows how desperate he was. He was there among the dead, and they're on the Roman side, but to a Jew, the dead, it was unclean. And that's a huge theme in Mark too, cleanliness and uncleanliness throughout the Gospel of Mark. Look for that as you're reading Mark. and he was not able to be bound. He was out of control, and no one could control him. He could break through shackles. He tore apart the chains and broke the shackles in pieces. No one was strong enough to control him. All through the day and night, he cried out in the tombs and hills, and he cut himself with sharp stones. So even to the point of self-harm, this is how out of control this person was. Seeing Jesus from a distance, the man fell on his knees before him. He screamed out with a loud shriek, saying, "Who am I to you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus said to him, "Evil spirits come out of the man." So let me stop reading and just make a few comments. I know you all have all read this week. We're all reading through the Gospel of Mark every week. And so hopefully you read in a different translation for this second week in the Gospel of Mark. And maybe you're even spending a little extra time on the chapters that we're studying. But if you look here, you'll see certain things that I just want to point out about this. The scene here, and it, as you're picturing Mark, it's good to sort of visualize it, see it like a movie. So the scene is a hillside with a cliff at the end, and it's right on the Sea of Galilee, and there's herdsmen that are watching sheep there on this cliffside. The demons actually ask to not be tortured, which is very ironic because they're torturing the man, but they ask not to be tortured. And it shows that even though they know who Jesus is, they don't understand the nature of Jesus. Because if they understood the nature of Jesus, they would know that Jesus doesn't torture people. That's not what he does. And so they just assume that he's like their master, Satan, but he's not. He's totally different from Satan. Jesus actually frees us from any torture that we might inflict upon ourselves. That's what Jesus wants to do. And so the demons, who are called legion, and a Roman legion could be up to 3,000 people. It's a huge amount of people. So these demons, they were many that were possessing this man. They asked to go into the pigs. And you have this really, really interesting scene, a bit of a strange scene in Mark. Oh, sorry, I can't. Let's see if I can get out of this. I'm trying to advance the slide here. There it goes. I don't actually own this book, but I think it's a pretty cool looking book, The Big Pig Stampede. I mean, you can imagine this being a movie scene. Around 2,000 pigs going off the cliff and into the water, drowned in the water. And when you get to verses 14 through 17, all of a sudden now, fear enters the story at this point. Fear enters the story because the villagers approach and the villagers see what has happened here. Two things scare them, and they're very different things. One thing that scares them is this person that was clearly out of his mind and not in control of himself is now in his right mind. And to see that radical transformation in a person scares them. And that happens sometimes. I know even as we have a radical transformation because of Jesus, sometimes people are afraid when they see that in us. And they were scared by that. But the other thing was, when they saw what happened with the pigs, they were scared also because they were afraid for loss of revenue for the village, or just even how could this type of thing happen? How is Jesus so powerful that he is able to do this? But their reaction to the event was to ask Jesus to leave. And that's what fear can cause us to do. Fear can cause us to push Jesus away. That's why we have to be careful whenever we see fear entering our lives, because it is a step toward pushing Jesus away. And when we see fear, we need to try our best to respond with faith, because the one person we should not push away when we're fearful, it's Jesus. The one person we should embrace and draw closer and more near is Jesus. And so when we feel fear, that emotion welling up, pull Jesus closer. Don't push him away. And I want you just to ask yourself right now and just think about, and think about this week. It's just a practical question. What are some ways when you start feeling fear that you start pushing Jesus away? What are some ways that fear causes you to push Jesus away? Then what are some ways that when you start feeling fear that you can pull Jesus closer? That's the other side of the question. Some things that you can do to decide, I'm going to cling to Jesus right now because I'm starting to feel fearful in my life. I know for me personally, when I feel fear, and the way that I push Jesus away is I can retreat into myself. That's what I do. That's my natural tendency. I get fearful and I don't want to share it with anybody. I don't want to be around anybody. I just want to be alone. And I end up pushing Jesus away when I do that. It causes me to get lethargic. It causes me to not be productive. It causes me to not read as much, not study as much, not pray as much. And in doing all of that, I'm pushing Jesus away too. And so since I tend to be an introvert by nature, when I get fearful, that's what I revert to. Just find me a cubicle in the library and let me hide. I want to take a nap. I want to sleep until it's over. I want to wake up and it all be gone. That's me. That's just who I am. For you, you might fight. That might be your nature. I'm just going to wrong and so mad. For me, let me sleep until it's over and I'll wake up happy. But what is it for you? You need to think about it, and you need to know your tendencies and to be able to have that much self-awareness about yourself to see, because fear can start us on a downward spiral. And if we don't stop, that spiral can end up anywhere. It can end up in an addiction if we allow it to. So we need to see when that times of fear, it's the time to cling to Jesus. And so when I face fear with Jesus, then I decide I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to stay active. I'm going to stay productive. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to let Lee know about what I'm feeling right now. Those are ways that I know that I'm clinging to Jesus when I'm fearful. I pray. I meditate. I stay active. Faith or fear, what will we choose? And then in verses 18 through 20, Jesus departs in a boat, and the man says that he wants to go with him. Notice the people try to drive Jesus away, but what does the man do? He tries to cling to Jesus. He wants to cling to Jesus. He wants to be a disciple. Take me on your journey with you. Let me be one of your followers. But Jesus has a different path for him. Jesus sends him back to his family because he wants to restore the man to his community and restore the man to his family. He's been isolated from them far too long. You know what the man does? Mark doesn't even report if he goes back home to his family or not. That's not the report that Mark gives. Mark says the man went to the Decapolis, to the 10 cities of the Decapolis, and preached about Jesus and preached about what happened to him. Why? Because when something awesome like that happens in your life, you have to share it. And the Decapolis, these were major Roman cities on that side of the Sea of Galilee. I've been to one of them. One of them is Bethshean, Scanathalus in the first century. It was a major Roman city with wide roads and huge columns and an amphitheater and a theater and a temple on top of a mountain. It's a beautiful, beautiful city. And that man went and preached in that city. And shared the news of Jesus, because when Jesus helps you conquer your fear and you make a decision to be faithful, that's the kind of thing you're going to do. You're going to share about Jesus with other people. Okay, let's move on to the next story now. We're going to look in, there we go. Stories 3 and 4. This is a healing and a resurrection. It's two stories woven into one story. So starts with Jairus and then goes to the woman with the issue of blood and then ends up with Jairus as well. Mark 5, 21 through 23. So we are going to start with story 3 because the Jairus is just introduced very briefly at the beginning. And let's talk about the woman with the issue of blood. Then we'll go to to story four, which is Jairus and the raising of his daughter. Okay, I'll read a little bit of this. Jesus again crossed over to the other side of the lake in a boat, and large crowds followed him. Jesus stayed on the lakeside. So he's now back on the Jewish side of the Sea of Galilee. One of the rulers of the synagogue named Jairus, but it can be pronounced a number of different ways. I usually say Jairus because the A and the I in Greek, it's pronounced that way. Jairus approached him and fell at his feet. He cried out with many words, saying, "My daughter is close to death. Come and place your hands on her so that she will get well and live." So Jesus is on a very urgent mission to go heal this girl who is about to die. But look at what happens when he's on the way. Jesus went with him. A large crowd was following Jesus. They pressed on him. This is verse 24. 25, in the crowd was a woman with a hemorrhage of blood for 12 years. And then you see her desperation. The desperation is shown in this next line in the language that's used. She had suffered much, been under the care of many doctors. She had spent everything she had on finding a cure, but she had not been helped. In fact, she had grown worse. Hearing about this, Jesus came with the crowd she came with the crowd and followed behind Jesus. She touched his garment. She thought, "If I just touch his garment, I will be healed." Immediately, her flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that her sickness had been cured. Right away, Jesus knew in himself that his power had gone out from him. So he turned to the crowd and said, "Who touched my garment?" His apprentices said to him, "You see this great crowd pressing on you, and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" Jesus looked around to see who had touched him. Trembling with fear and knowing what had happened to her, the woman came, bowed before Jesus, and told him the whole truth. Jesus said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." And then it goes on to the next story. But let's just stop there and focus a little bit on the healing of this woman. And where does faith and fear enter this story? We talked about how desperate she was. And in this story, urgency meets urgency, because Jesus is urgently going to keep a girl from dying. And now in the middle of the story, a woman is reaching out with urgency to Jesus. She has a hemorrhage and she's been suffering from it for 12 years, seeing doctor after doctor, no cure. In fact, she's gotten worse. And she spent all of her money while doing this. So she decides, "If I just touch his garment, I will be healed." And that is amazing faith there, that she believes that if she'll just reach out and touch Jesus, she will be healed. And that took faith, because here's the thing. A woman with a hemorrhage like her, on the Jewish side of the Galilee, she should not even be in a crowd. That's Jewish law, because every person that touches her or she touches, she makes unclean. And so she had faith that I'm going to press through this Jewish law here, and I'm going to do what I think is right. And she enters into this crowd. When she reaches out and touches Jesus, what should happen, according to Jewish law and tradition, is Jesus should have become unclean because of her touch. But instead, the cleanliness of Jesus cleanses her. Jesus doesn't become unclean. She becomes clean, because that's the power of Jesus to heal her. He makes her clean. And anytime we reach out and touch Jesus, no matter how unclean we might feel inside, Jesus can cleanse us. We should never, ever feel like I am too unclean to reach out for Jesus, because he will cleanse us if we'll reach out and touch him, if we will reach out to touch him. So Jesus asked, "Who touched me?" And I think that's beautiful, because Jesus knew someone touched him. The disciples around are like, they're like, "Jesus, everybody's touching you. This is not anything new. We've walked through lots of multitudes. Really, seriously, who touched you? So many people are touching you right now." But Jesus was looking for one person that he knew needed help. He had already cleansed her. He had already healed her. What was he doing now? He wanted to connect with her, because that's what Jesus does. It's not enough just to heal physically. Jesus wants to heal spiritually. He wants to communicate with her. He wanted to know who she was. He wanted to look into her eyes. He wanted to have a conversation with her. Edwards writes this in his commentary. I think I might have it. There it is. She wants a cure, however, a something, whereas Jesus desired a personal encounter with someone. See the difference there? He is not content to dispatch a miracle. He wants to encounter a person. In the kingdom of God, miracle leads to meeting. Discipleship is not simply getting our needs met. It is being in the presence of Jesus, being known by him and following him. So Jesus wants to encounter the person, just like he wants to encounter all of us. But here's where fear enters the story. The woman, when she responds, she approaches Jesus now that she's been healed, and now that she has to really look into his eyes and have a conversation with him, she approaches with fear and trembling. Fear enters the story. Three stories so far, three times fear and faith have been involved in these stories. Her fear does not keep her away from Jesus. She feels the fear, but she still speaks up. And that's great, because fear is an emotion. It's going to come. She could have cowered because of the fear, but she didn't. Instead, her faith propels her to Jesus. Her faith overcomes her fear. She bows before Jesus. She tells him what she did. Mary Talbot, in her commentary, says this: the woman is not courageous because she's fearful and trembling, but when she must confess, she does so in fear and trembling. But faith can drive out fear. She said that in the earlier quote, and that's such a great quote. Faith can drive out fear. Her faith in Jesus' power is so great that she can touch him and be saved. Faith is not solely for the domain. I want you to see this. This is so important that you get this, that we see this. Faith is not solely the domain of the strong, the powerful, and the confident, but even the weak, the lowly, and the cowardly can respond with faith that drives out fear and thus saves. I love that so much because I can relate to that. I mean, I don't consider myself walking around in the domain of the strong and the powerful. I consider myself more of a person who lacks confidence, who is an introvert. But this is so great because I can still be faithful and drive away fear, just like she did in this story. So I can really relate to what it's saying there. And I love that Jesus, the last words that he says to her are to go in peace. That means wholeness. Go in, the Hebrew is shalom there. The Greek is eirene. But go in shalom. Go in wholeness. He basically has this conversation with her, heals her physically and heals her spiritually, and says, now you're whole. Go live a whole life. And that's what Jesus offers for all of us and for everyone. He offers us wholeness in our lives. Now we'll look at this last story very quickly here. This last story, the fourth story, is about the raising of Jairus' daughter, and it's told in Mark 5, 35 through 43. I'm just going to make some points about it because I want to finish out with a little bit of a practical instruction here. But the story continues that a crowd approaches Jesus and Jairus from the house, from Jairus's house, and they give some very disturbing news. They announce, your daughter is dead. Don't trouble the teacher anymore. And we don't see Jairus's reaction. I would love to have seen Jairus's reaction, because as a dad, I can only imagine his reaction. I'm sure he was distraught. I'm sure he blamed himself. If I had only gotten to Jesus earlier, he probably was a bit mad. I mean, he probably thought, you know, I found help, but I just didn't get there soon enough. Or maybe he even felt like, Jesus, why did you stop for that lady? You knew how urgent this was. I told you She's at the point of death. Why didn't we just go? And so I'm sure Jairus is just flooded with all kinds of emotion. His daughter that he was on the way to save, and he got the answer for her right there with him. Let's say she's taken poison and the antidote is right there in his hand. He's right there running to her to give her the antidote, but he doesn't make it. Imagine what he was feeling. But now look at Jesus. Look at his reaction. It's such a different reaction than that. Jesus, he doesn't even try to comfort Jairus at that point. He doesn't reach out to console him. What he says is, and this is where fear enters the picture for this fourth story, he says, "Do not be afraid, only believe." It's amazing. Jesus is so confident here. He doesn't reach out to comfort, to console. He looks and he says, "Don't fear, have faith." And that's something that we need to put in our minds and just keep in our minds all the time. Anytime we feel fear rising up, don't fear, have faith. I mean, just drill it into our brains and then figure out ways that we can make it happen in our lives. It's such a powerful message that Jesus is giving there. Don't fear, have faith. As I mentioned earlier, the opposite of fear, of faith rather, isn't necessarily disbelief, it's fear. And so Jesus is saying, don't fear, have faith, or the opposite of that, have faith and don't fear. When we grow fearful, faith is absent. When we fear, when we feel fear starting to seep into our soul, it's time to increase our faith. Jesus goes on to the house. The mourners are there, professional mourners. They were paid to be loud and to cause a commotion. And that was part of the Jewish tradition, the Jewish custom. The larger the loss, the more that they paid people and the more people came out to moan and to wail and to tear their shirts. When Herod the Great died, he put an edict out before his death. Herod was a really, really bad person, but he put an edict out that he was going to have people killed all over Jerusalem. I mean, just murdered all over Jerusalem. So they would hear people crying and think they were crying for him. Nobody cried when Herod died. That was the culture. And so there's a commotion going on at the house. And what happens is Jesus expels all the mourners from the house, takes the mother, the father, and his inner circle, Peter, James, and John, and they go into the girl's room. It's a very tender, touching scene, be a beautiful movie scene, like all of these would be. Jesus takes her hand. Touch is important in the Gospel of Mark. The touch of Jesus, or reaching out to touch Jesus, is very important. Christianity is a contact sport. Christianity is about hugging people, touching people. I have to really work on it, but that's what Christianity ought to be. And that's the way it was with Jesus. He touched people. He reached out to people. Touch demonstrates warmth. It demonstrates care, concern, and love. And this time, to raise her from the dead, he's controlled the chaotic waters. He has expelled chaotic evil. He has cured an uncurable disease. And now he's going to overcome death itself. Four amazing miracles, back to back to back to back. Now he overcomes death and raises her from the dead with two words, Talitha cum, little girl, get up. Two words, and he conquers death. That's how powerful Jesus is. One word to silence a storm, two words to raise a girl from the dead. The girl immediately rises from the bed and walks around. Jesus warns the witnesses not to tell anyone. He instructs her parents to get her something to eat. I bet she asked for ice cream or something sweet, or a cookie, something like that. Jesus took a tragedy and turned it into a happy ending. That's what Jesus does. That's who Jesus is. When Jesus met us, all of us, in some way or another, we were a mess. Some bigger messes than others, but in some way, all of us were a mess. And Jesus knows how to fix people who are in a mess. He heals wounds. That's what he does. He cleans up our messes. Jesus is our hope. Now, I want to turn there. We saw fear and faith in that story. Let me just close out with a few practical points here. Okay, here we go. A few practical points. If you're wondering, okay, how do I dispel fear with faith? Well, first off, I want to ask you this week to spend a little time listing some areas where fear attacks you. For me, personally, I can be attacked with my finances. I could be attacked in a big way with my family, my children, my grandchildren. That's the biggest attack of all for me personally, just to be fearful for them and not to be faithful about them. And then when I think about the future, I mean, I'm getting older. And so when you get older, you think about what will the next 10 years look like? And, you know, I had a stroke and you start thinking about things like that. And these are things that I think of for you. What are some things in your life where you start feeling fear rise or seep into you? And just name those areas, name them, know them, because you're going to want to know how to react in these areas. So the second thing I would ask you to do is I would ask you to list what is in your control in those areas, and then list what is out of your control in those areas. It's important to know that, because the things that are in your control, you can do something about. The things that are out of your control, that's where you have to decide, I will be faithful here. Can't do anything about it anyway, so I will choose faith over fear. So let's take finances, for example. What are some things that are in my control with finances? Well, I can live on a budget. I have control to do that. I can get rid of the debt in my life. I can just work to pay off my debt. Lee and I were in debt for a number of years, and we got great help from Nelson and Rivera and from Bobby Ritter, and we got out of debt. And that feels so freeing to be able to do that. But it takes a lot of work to do that. But that was in our control. And then that goes to the last thing, is you can get advice. You can get help. Nelson was a tremendous help for us. We learned so much from him. Bobby Ritter, another person, gave us great help. And so those are things that are in my control in this area. But there are some things that are just out of my control. I need to know that. I can't control the stock market. I can't control inflation. I can't control COVID-19. And so when it comes to those things, what I have to learn is I have to learn to be faithful. I have to decide. I have to choose. I will choose to be faithful, not fearful. I see what's happening with the stock market. I choose to believe that God will see me through this, because he always has seen me through whatever I have faced in life. I choose God. I choose Jesus. I choose faith. And that to me is really helpful. And by choosing faith, what it allows me to do, it allows me to let go of the fear, cling to Jesus, embrace Jesus, and help the fear to dissipate. Okay. And then this last thing is to drive away fear with faith. Then I have to decide I'm going to control what I can control, and I leave the rest up to God. I can control my budget. No need to fear there. I can't control COVID-19, but instead of giving in to fear, I will trust God to be there with me through this very, very hard time. And all of us have had to learn to do that over the last year and a half, to trust God through a time that none of us anticipated, none of us saw coming, and a very stressful time for all of us. Those are times in which you have to decide, we have to decide, I'm going to choose faith here. So live faithfully to give God what is out of our control, including our fear. What have we looked at tonight? We've looked at four stories, four amazing miracles. Jesus calms the storm with a single word. He exorcises demons from a man who is so desperate and renews his life. He cures an incurable illness in a woman. And he raises a little girl from the dead and gives her back to her parents. Disastrous storms, disease, demons, death, Jesus overcomes all. He overcomes the chaotic waters of the deep, the demonic forces of evil, the incurable disease, and the ultimate destroyer of life, Thanos himself, death. If Jesus can overcome all this, why do we give in to fear? We will be fearful. It's an emotion that will come, but why give in to it when we can choose faith? Let's choose faith over fear. I'll close with this little poem I wrote last week. The opposite of faith is fear. Fear is emotion. Faith is decision. Fear freezes. Faith invigorates. Fear paralyzes. Faith propels. Both faith and fear live in the heart. Jesus says, do not fear. Just have faith. I answer, I believe. Help me with my fear. Thank you. Let me see if I can exit out right now. I will stop the sharing and I will...